Well, hello, and welcome to Lunch Bites this Wednesday with Cherie Russell. And today I thought I'd talk about imposter syndrome, because an estimated 70% of people experience at some point in their lives what psychologists actually call imposter phenomena, but commonly known as imposter syndrome. Feeling like you don't belong, or your friends or colleagues are going to discover you're a fraud, and you don't actually deserve your job and accomplishments. And this phenomenon affects all kinds of people from all parts of life, both men and women, from students to business people, from teachers to actors. So just to give you a little background, the term imposter syndrome was introduced by psychologists Pauline Clarke and Suzanne Imes, and published in their research paper in 1978. Their research studied 150 highly successful women from a wide range of professional fields, such as law, nursing, medicine, social work, and university teaching. And they wanted to find out why so many bright women, despite consistent and impressive evidence to the contrary, continue to see themselves as imposters, who pretend to be bright but really are not. But since then, research has shown that both men and women experience so-called imposter feelings. The idea that you've only succeeded due to luck and not because of your talent or qualifications. The internal feelings of chronic self-doubt don't actually equate with low self-esteem or lack of self-confidence, because many high-achieving, highly successful people often suffer. And imposter feelings can apply to anyone who isn't able to recognise and own their successes. But imposter syndrome hovers uncertainly between psychiatry, psychology and popular culture. Because interestingly, psychologists talk of imposter phenomenon, not imposter syndrome. And a phenomenon is an event that's been observed and considered factual, but whose cause or explanation is considered questionable, unknown, or not well researched. As opposed to a syndrome, which is a group of signs and symptoms that occur together and characterise a particular abnormality or a condition such as emotions or actions that form an identifiable pattern. So some common thoughts and feelings associated with imposter syndrome include fear of failure, and there can be a huge amount of pressure currently not to fail in order to avoid being found out. And paradoxically, success also becomes an issue as it brings the added pressure of responsibility and visibility. And this can lead to an inability to enjoy success. And then there's feeling like a fake. Imposters may believe that they don't deserve success or professional accolades and feel that somehow others have been deceived into thinking otherwise. And this goes hand in hand with a fear of being found out or discovered. They believe that they give the impression that they're more competent than they are and have deep feelings that they actually lack knowledge or expertise. Often they believe they don't deserve a position or a promotion, and that they're anxious that somebody has made a mistake. And then there's the feeling that it's all just down to luck. The tendency to attribute success or luck to other external reasons and not their abilities. And this is a clear indicator of imposter syndrome or feelings. And they may typically say or think, I just got lucky, or I was a fluke, I was just in the right place at the right time. And often this can mask the fear that they won't be able to succeed the next time. The tendency to downplay success and to discount it is marked in those with imposter syndrome. They may attribute their success to it being an easy task or having support and often having a hard time accepting compliments. Again, they think their success is down to luck, good timing, or having fooled others. So where does this come from? Some researchers believe it has its roots in the labels that parents attach to particular members of the family. For example, one child might be designated the intelligent one, and the other perhaps a sensitive one or a sporty one. Another theory is that parents can program the child with message of superiority. The child is so fully supported, and the parents and child believe that he or she is superior or perfect. So why do people experience imposter phenomenon? Because people who suffer imposter phenomenon have all the external hallmarks of success: the good grades, the promotions, the positive feedback from their peers. Yet deep down they feel as if they're not really up to the job. So it's no surprise that imposter phenomenon can make us feel stressed or miserable. And researchers also found patterns in people who experience imposter feelings. Perfectionist, who set extremely high expectations for themselves. And even if they meet 99% of their goals, they're going to feel like failures. And any small mistake will make them question their own competence. Then there's the experts, who feel the need to know every piece of information before they start a project and constantly look for new certificates or trainings to improve their skill. They won't apply for a job if they don't feel they meet all the criteria in posting. And they might be hesitant to ask a question in class or speak up in a meeting at work because they're afraid of looking stupid or they don't already know the answer. So when the natural genius has to struggle or work hard to accomplish something, he or she thinks they aren't good enough. Or they're used to skills coming easily, and when they have to put in effort, their brain tells them that it's proof that there is an imposter. And then there's the soloists, who feel they have to accomplish tasks on their own. And if they need to ask for help, they think this means they're a failure or a fraud. And then there's the supermen or superwomen, who push themselves to work harder than those around them to prove that they're not imposters. They feel the need to succeed in all aspects of life, at work, as parents, as partners, and may feel stressed that they're not actually accomplishing something. And there are endless self-help books, coaching guides about imposter syndrome. The usual aim is to help sufferers by informing them that their self-doubt fits a pattern and are shared by many others, including celebrities, artists, and sporting stars. But what's more surprising is that by accepting the self-diagnosis of imposter syndrome, it may make matters even worse. And the problem is the label. The trouble is that the imposter label is that an imposter is not merely inadequate. An imposter is by definition a cheat, a fraud, or someone who intentionally deceives other people. And this introduced the idea of shame and moral guilt into the equation. In other words, I am wronging others by deliberately covering up my shortcomings. And even the well-meaning suggestion, like we've all heard, fake it until you make it, can reinforce the idea that we have to lie. If we don't think we're good enough, we have to lie. And many of us can't get comfortable with lying, nor should we. So perhaps encouraging people to think of their self-doubts as imposter syndrome may actually increase their distress by adding to the guilt of deception, to the shame of inadequacy. And another problem arises because imposter syndrome often involves deep fear of being unmasked. And owning one's imposter syndrome risks drawing attention to the very inadequacies we're supposed to be trying to hide, therefore highlighting our history of supposed deception. So shame and guilt conspire to make this a huge challenge. And ironically, the worse one's imposter syndrome is, the harder it will be to accept it in public. It's a double bind. And meanwhile, once we're surrounded by other people discussing their own imposter syndrome, it can seem almost boastful to say that we're free of the condition. And perhaps the ethics of modesty can often encourage us to join in with the crowd of self-diagnosed imposters. But there is something rather appealing about categorising our worries and difficulties as a syndrome, because the pseudo-medical language can also make it easier to distance ourselves from uncomfortable feelings of low confidence and inability by reframing it as symptoms of a disorder. It's easier perhaps to think, oh, that's just my imposter syndrome talking. And it can enable us to find solidarity with others who feel the same way, which may alleviate the guilt or the challenge of seeing those uncomfortable feelings as something for which we have to take responsibility for and can change. So some suggestions for ways to look at and combat imposter phenomenon. Start to recognise those imposter feelings when they emerge, because awareness is the first step to change. So ensure you track those thoughts, what they are, and when they emerge. And know that the feeling is normal. Imposter phenomenon is more common than you think. It infects everyone from high school honor students to Nobel Prize winners. But it's rarely discussed because each person might feel like they're keeping a secret. However, when someone speaks up about it, hundreds more breathe a sigh of relief and think, phew, it's not just me. So there's some value in talking about your feelings, because there may be others who feel like imposters too. And it's better to have an open dialogue rather than harbour negative thoughts alone. So maybe disclose your feelings to a trusted friend or close colleague, and it'll help you to come away with boosted spirits. But there's a warning here. Change the subject if your friend simply tells you to stop feeling insecure. If you could stop, you would have already. And remind yourself of all that you've accomplished. Academics keep a curriculum vitae. It's more than a resume. It lists everything that they've accomplished. So maybe begin to do the same, not just your professional CV, but a personal one, and read it from time to time. Keep your old letters of recommendation handy and read those. And if you've been given an award, read the inscription, display it somewhere. You don't just look good on paper. These are actual accomplishments you've earned. And begin to rewrite your mental programs. Instead of telling yourself that everyone's going to find out about you or that you don't deserve success, remind yourself that it's normal not to know everything, and you'll find out more as you progress and as you learn. And consider the context, because most people will have moments or occasions where they don't feel 100% confident. It's normal to feel out of your depth. And there may be times where self-doubt is just a normal reaction. If you catch yourself thinking you're useless, just reframe it. The fact that I feel useless right now doesn't mean I really am. And seek support. Everyone needs help. Recognize that you can seek assistance and you don't have to do everything alone. This will give you a really good reality check and help you talk things through. Perhaps even seek out a mentor. Ask a senior colleague for guidance and navigation through those intimidating environments. And remember, one of the NLP preconcepts, there is no such thing as failure, only feedback. We learn more from getting it wrong than we ever do from getting it right first time. You could also teach or become a mentor to someone else. You'll be surprised how much you do know. Because as we become experts in a field or raised to the top of the class, we consciously forget how much we've learnt, but we consciously realise how much we have to learn, which amplifies this sense of feeling a fraud, perhaps. It's only when we contrast ourselves with true newbies that we're able to gain perspective on our success. So remind yourself how far you've come by helping to nurture the next generation. And remember, it's okay not to know what you're doing all the time. After any big life event, like going back to school or earning a promotion, there's a steep learning curve. So rather than hiding, think of yourself as a public amateur or a boss in training. Give yourself permission to learn. Think of yourself as someone that's learning and gaining expertise in the public eye. Because as long as you're enthusiastic about learning, people will cut you some slack. They'll help you. And reframe failure as a learning opportunity. Find out lessons and use them constructively in future. Maybe even expect initial failure. The author, Anne Lamott, titles every new work her shitty first draft. And a neighbour of mine told her child, here's your new bike. You have to fall off at least 10 times before you get good. When I was an instructor, I always used to say to my kids that I was teaching, takes 7 falls to make a rider. So allow yourself similar leeway to mess up at any new beginning. And visualise your success. Keep your eye on the outcome. Completing the task or making the presentation will keep you focused and calm, one step at a time. And please, be kind to yourself. Remember, you're entitled to make small mistakes occasionally, and forgive yourself. And don't forget to reward yourself for getting the big things right. On a personal note, I was brought up by my very Victorian grandmother. She had a very healthy appreciation of humility and the understanding that none of us have all the answers. A balance exists between imposter syndrome and egomania, and perhaps authentic modesty keeps us real. So if anybody would like to talk about that, please don't hesitate to give me a call. Always there and welcome, having a chat.